Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
The Democratic Alliance has gazetted a public procurement amendment bill which is looking to change how broad-based black economic empowerment works and the legislation around that. Let's speak to the DA head of policy, Matthew Cuthbert. Matthew, thanks so much for your time on Kaya 959 this evening. Let's just speak about what is black economic empowerment as the DA understands it before we go into the bill.
Good evening, Pamelo. Thank you so much for having me on your show this evening, and also good evening to all of your listeners.
Yeah, you know what? Just a quick one, Matt. It's Nzinga because I'm just signing in for Pamelo.
Oh, my apologies. No, my apologies. I was sent the name in advance.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
my
just,
apologies
for that, Nzinga. Just sneaking in at the back for tonight, yeah.
No problem at all. Yeah. So I think our understanding of empowerment as it stands is an inclusive level of empowerment that focuses on uplifting people out of poverty, allowing them to climb up the opportunity ladder, and having equal access to services, having equal access to opportunity, and ultimately that there is a role, particularly in the case of public procurement, for the state to play in order to create a social impact and investment in those specific communities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fundamentally different to the ANC's approach towards transformation policy and empowerment policy in general.
Yeah, but when we're speaking about that act, it's obviously, it's a government act. It's not necessarily an ANC act. So government's definition is that the objective of the act is to advance economic transformation and enhance the economic participation of black people in the South African economy. Just take us through how you want to change those objectives with the amendment.
Well, I think it's important for us to understand that the way in which the ANC operate, there's very little separation between party and state. And at the time of the introduction of this legislation in 2003, it was under an ANC majority government that this particular law and policy was in fact implemented. Whereas the ANC focuses on race as the sole determining factor in empowerment, the DA focuses on poverty as the proxy for disadvantage. It's impossible to say that rich ANC beneficiaries such as the president himself and other members of the senior leadership of the ANC are disadvantaged if we were to look at their living standards measure. And this is why we believe that re-empowerment has taken place time and time again, because there's only been a consideration for race and not the socioeconomic circumstances of people who are being chosen to be empowered. Mm-hmm. And I think the unique element to our approach is that we understand that the vast majority of people who find themselves unemployed, who find themselves trapped in poverty and are the victims of inequality are black South Africans. If we look at the numbers by way of example, the highest unemployment rate among South Africans, black South Africans, at 36%. We look at poverty, 30 million black South Africans find themselves in poverty out of a total population of 50 million. So they would be, by and large, the beneficiaries of our policy. But on the other hand, we also don't exclude anyone on the basis of race, and we rather focus on their socioeconomic circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a far more inclusive approach, and I think it's an approach that actually allows for direct investment back into communities in which businesses operate, rather than there just being some sort of a nominal share or asset transfer that takes place between political entrepreneurs and big business.
Yeah, I'm going to keep on referring to it as government because I understand your point of saying you feel that as though there's very little separation between party and state. But as things stand, we do have different legislative arms, and we've got, you know, we've got the courts, we've got parliament, and we've got party. And they're not enmeshed, in my understanding. It's not the ANC that's doing things. It's a government act, right?
Well, I would say I would disagree with you.
I mean, I would disagree
with you politely. If we see, you know, how CADA deployment has played a role in the appointment within the civil service, and the fact that many what should be impartial government decisions have been taken, you know,
sure,
in ANC
because
party
of the
meetings.
ANC majority. Agreed
yes,
with you
and,
there,
and this,
but...
And this law is as a result of an ANC-led government who do not recognize the separation between the party and the state. But
we're
going
to
have
to respectfully disagree because I think
we can respectfully disagree on that. Yes.
And I think factually it's not... It can be an ANC government. It's not now. I agree, you guys are GNU. You guys are now all together. But I think we must keep facts as facts, but when we're looking at transformation and the failings that you're speaking about, there is a BBBE Commission report titled National Status and Trends on BBBE Transformation Report. And they're saying the lack of transformation in South Africa and the failures when it comes to empowerment, and I'm quoting them directly here, the blatant disregard for BBBE by the majority of public and private sector entities. That is one of the reasons they ascribe to it. So I'm wondering, you know, we know that there's challenges around inequality in South Africa. And then there's also a reticence by both public and private bodies to actually empower people. So we can have legislation, government legislation, that says, you know, you need X amount of black people, white women, young people, or whatever it is, empowered. But if you as a company don't want to do that, then there's also going to be a failure when it comes to that. How would you deal with that reticence, especially when it comes to the private sector?
Well, I think fundamentally, because of the nature of BEE, and I note the report which you cite here, the fundamental nature of BEE is that, by and large, it's been as a result of political connections that people are able to gain access to, whether that be state or whether that be private contracts. Because we must look back at the genesis of this policy and the whole idea as to how it came about. We know that it's formally introduced in 2003, but prior to that, we basically have big business in the room with political entrepreneurs within the ANC, and they decide, well, this is a good opportunity for big business to retain the status quo. And we then find ourselves in a situation in the ANC where they say, well, this is a great opportunity for us to enrich ourselves. And I think that's fundamentally where the flaw comes in here. And if they were truly committed, and this is government and the ANC part of the government, if we are to be specific about if we're truly committed towards redress, then that if the effect of that policy would have trickled down to the vast majority of South Africans who find themselves unemployed, trapped in poverty, and ultimately the victims of inequality. And I think that the evidence is wide-ranging to show just how all of these procurement systems have been abused over time, whether we look at the recent revelations in Ekurhuleni and the murder of the chief auditor who had picked up irregularities in the chemical toilet tender. If we look at, you know, the entire state capture era and the kickbacks that were given to the Guptas, and we look at a variety of other incidents where these exact public procurement processes, and also in some instances private procurement processes, have been abused by those who have access, and this has been at the expense of the poor South African.
That is extremely tragic. And I want to go back to the objectives of the Act, and then I think the question that I was asking was about the reticence, because we also know that there's a reason that there was a race-based policy that was introduced, right? We know that for about 46 years prior to democracy, there was legislation that ensured the exclusion of black people from the majority of the economy. And in order, you know, cynically, we can say, you know, in order to benefit themselves, but in order to right those inequalities, we see legislation like black economic empowerment. But when you have a country like South Africa, which is so divided and which is so awash with racial inequalities as a result of our history, just because something is the right thing to do doesn't mean people on either side are going to do the right thing. So I'm asking about the reticence of people who were empowered previously and who have no desire to transform, because why should they? Because if you have a mindset of exclusion, you're not going to just change your mind because government says so. So I'm asking about that reticence to transform. And well, how ultimately, you as a DA would deal with that?
Well, I think, you know, because of the structure of the system and the way in which it was set up, and I personally will argue that this is an exclusionary system, because it has not filtered down to people on the ground. And I think that's where the reticence comes in, is the fact that this system was designed to exclude the vast majority of South Africans. And I think that this is evidenced in those who have had political connections and been the ones who directly benefit from this specific policy. And that's why I think there's a reticence to want to change this. I mean, by way of example, in response to our bill, the best that the ANC could come up with was to say, well, you know, very beneficiaries of this particular policy must come out and defend it, not to actually look at what the statistics say when it comes to unemployment, when it comes to poverty, and all of the other socioeconomic indicators, which show that despite years and years of so-called transformation policy, the material circumstances of people on the ground have not changed. And I think what our system does differently is our system is an inclusive system that focuses on making sure that in the public procurement system, we get value for money, and we make sure that money, taxpayer money, that is paid over to companies that are to deliver services, deliver those services appropriately. That we don't continue to re-enrich those who have a proven track record of fraud, corruption, and misrepresentation. And then most importantly, that we focus on actual economic inclusion activities across a number of sectors. So whether that be in the case of human development and investing in early childhood development, whether that be in economic empowerment by getting local hiring initiatives in place, integrating small businesses into the value chain, or environmental sustainability projects such as setting up renewable energy sources and projects in specific communities, or other forms of corporate social investment back into communities such as legal aid centers, urban greening, and other NGO partnerships that really invest in the areas in which businesses operate and who want to do business with the state. And I think that's really where the key difference comes in, as it incentivizes business to want to give back to the community rather than simply comply because they know that they're going to be able to inflate their price and ultimately benefit from a system that is designed to be a stitcher.
Yeah, Matthew, when I read your press release, it says BBBE has turned ANC insiders into billionaires, while 44 million South Africans have been relegated to poverty and 12 million are trapped in unemployment queues. The DA will not allow this to stand any longer because we care deeply about the people of South Africa. I think that there is a big blind spot that you're missing, because I feel there is not context there. You know, 44 million South Africans did not land in 1994 in poverty. We understand the failings of government. We understand also the historical context, which I feel is ignored in the public procurement. So perhaps I'm missing something. If you could just speak to us about the importance of context when you are dealing with BBBE, and not just saying, you know, ANC is the reason for 44 million South Africans being relegated to poverty.
Well, I think let's expand on the poor economic policy choices that have taken place. And I think context is particularly important. And I think if read in its entirety, our statement reiterates a firm commitment to redressing the injustices of the past. We know that on the basis of race, that a large proportion of our population were not allowed to trade freely, were not allowed to access economic opportunity, and ultimately were barred from participating in many normal parts of life that we would consider to be absolutely appalling in the democratic era of our country. But I think it's important to also look at the broader economic context and policy choices that have been taken place. And this goes to some of the structural issues that we face in our economy, whether that be electricity constraints and specifically around affordable and reliable electricity, because you need electricity in order to be able to grow the economy. We've seen, despite there being a slight reprieve from load shedding, we have had year upon year upon year of load shedding. And this has fundamentally undermined our economic growth prospects. We then look at logistics. We look at the arteries that allow us to become an export-orientated economy, whether that be rail, whether that be port, whether that be roads. Once again, there has been an abject failure on the part of the successive ANC-led administrations in order to ensure that we have the necessary network infrastructure in order to be able to grow our economy. Then we look at public value for money and how our public money is spent on the productive side of the economy rather than in that money being paid over to individuals who overinflate prices, who ultimately steal money and divert those resources away from frontline services, which residents of South Africa so desperately need. we then look at crime and the failure to actually arrest the crime pandemic in this country, and the fact that we live in one of the most violent countries in the world, and where you have an investment or where you have a business, you're constantly at threat of criminal syndicates who try and extort money from you. So there are a number of structural issues that are in play which have led us to this economic situation. And a part of this exclusionary system is part BEE, and also a number of other poor economic policy choices that were the direct result of successive ANC-led administrations. And I think if put in the full context, this allows us to arrive at the position that we do in terms of our low growth numbers and declining GDP per capita over 12 years, the astronomic unemployment rate that we find ourselves in, and fundamentally the fact that we are the most unequal country on the world, in the world, where it's difficult for people to access economic opportunity, live a life of meaning, and ultimately put food on the table for their families.
Mm-hmm. In response to this, I'm reading that Duma Kobule, an economist, says that we are a white-owned and white-managed economy. In the private sector, according to the Commission for Employment Equity, 15% of African representation is in top management. White males, 3.5% of the population, account for 51% of top managers in the private sector. Race policies got us into this mess, and race policies will get us out of this mess. End quotes.
Well, Mr. Kubule is entitled to his view. I mean, there's a number of economic policy matters that we would disagree on. There are some rather questionable positions that the man holds, but nonetheless, I assume you would like me to respond to this. I would say, well, we've had employment equity in place. We've had a black economic empowerment in place. And why have we not been able to fundamentally change the structure of the economy? And that's once again because there's a stitch up that has taken place. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, if we want to create a more inclusive economy, there are a number of structural factors which in fact need to be addressed. We need to make sure that, you know, every South African, regardless of the circumstances of their birth, has access to quality education. We need to make sure that South Africans have skills that are marketable within our business environment in order for them to be able to get jobs. And fundamentally, we need to invest in our young people by ensuring that there's a conducive environment for businesses to want to expand, businesses to want to employ more people, and for us to find ourselves in a position where, regardless of whether you're white, black, Indian, or colored, female or male, you have the same opportunities, because the playing field has been leveled by virtue of you receiving the same level of public services that one should expect.
You are gender neutral too, no?
Well, gender neutral in your words.
Yeah. Matthew, you're seeking public comment. Just take us through that process.
So this is a part of the formal process. You obviously gazette your notice of intention to introduce the bill. We will then consider public submissions, whether that be from interested parties, just members of the public, NGOs, think tanks and the like, and we will obviously have a look at the comments which are received, and we will apply our minds to see how best we can incorporate those into the final version of the bill, which will serve before Parliament. And this is obviously a process where we want to engage with citizens in the country, get different perspectives. Mm. And, you know, we don't claim to be perfect, and we don't claim to have the monopoly on the truth. And there's often, you know, blind spots that we may not be aware of. And I think that this is an important process to allow for public engagement and for us to apply our minds to the inputs that are received.
Yeah, as we wrap up, Matthew, how important do you think perception is? We all come from, as we've spoken about, this very fractured history. And I think most people living in South Africa want it to work. How we all think that that's going to happen is obviously different, and that's where we disagree. Sometimes I was reading the press release and I was very uncomfortable with some of the language that was used there, right? And I know that also as a politician, you want to get the people going. You also want to be quite hard-hitting. But then there's also perception around, you know, even the aim of trying to get rid of black economic empowerment as it is, do you think it's important to also manage those as you're bringing people on that journey and as you're trying to get feedback and comments even on your blind spot?
Well, I just, if I could put a question back to you, and this comes from the statement itself. In the statement, we say that the DA may be in coalition with the ANC in government, but that doesn't mean we need to agree with him all of the time. We are in the GNU to represent the interests of all South Africans, and we will not relent. And then we go on to say, as a party that cares deeply for our country and its people, it angers us to see how the ANC has used state resources to line its pockets instead of delivering much-needed services and upliftment to the people. Could you explain to me what's controversial about that?
What I was uncomfortable with is the use of feeding trough relating to the ANC. And I understand, you know, use of language. But I also feel as though in a climate where people are moving more towards division and polarization, even language like that sounds either dehumanizing or it's just, it could be a dog whistle. Or for me, it's very uncomfortable. And that's because I read about, you know, even the effect of language. We saw what happened with language in Rwanda. I'm not saying you were taking it that far, but that made me deeply uncomfortable. That is,
Well, you are entitled to your view. There was no attempt to dehumanize anyone, and there was no attempt to draw any comparison to anyone in a derogatory way. But fundamentally, right, I think as a common figure of speech, and the fact that this has been used as an opportunity to loot and plunder, I would say that that is an apt description of exactly what has in fact taken place. And I think fundamentally in the entire message which we got across there was one of inclusion and one of wanting to bring South Africans together. Yes, we are critical of the ANC, but fundamentally we're not out here to go and score cheap political points. We have a commitment, we have a policy which we have put forward in a proposal. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes these things that may be misinterpreted, but it's with no ill intent that these kinds of things are included in a statement.
All right. Dear Head of Policy, Matthew Cuthbert, thank you so much for your time on Kai 959 Point of View this evening. Really good to chat to you as you speak about the bill that you are gazetting. Open for public comment there. Do share your views with the Democratic Alliance.
Click kaya959.co.za. This is how we do it. To download the Point of View podcast.